Hi everyone, this is Marissa. Before I get into this week's episode, I just want to make a correction here. I mispronounced the names of one of the writers whose articles I cite several times in this episode. The article is The Political Speechwriter's Life, and it's written by Robert Lehrman. I pronounced it a few times as layman. So I just want to say that before I get into this episode, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes to this article. I highly recommend you check all of these articles out, especially this one, because before he became a political speechwriter, Robert Lehrman studied with Kurt Vonnegut at the Iowa Writers' Workshop. Kurt Vonnegut happens to be one of my all-time favorite writers, and Lehrman begins this piece that I'm including the link to by talking a little bit about studying with Kurt Vonnegut. So if you're a Vonnegut fan like I am, you'll find this article interesting. Anyway, on with this week's episode. Hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh, a place to chow down on topics relevant to writers of all kinds.
Hello, and welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh. I'm Marissa, and I hope you're doing well and staying healthy, both physically and mentally. From what I've been seeing, some people are adjusting to this permanent state of semi-quarantine. I'm not going to say it's the new normal, because I've never been a fan of what a lot of people consider normal, whether it's new or otherwise. But I know a lot of people are still having a hard time. They miss regular physical contact with others. And no matter how much time they spend chatting with their friends and family on Zoom or Skype or FaceTime, they feel like it's not the same as being in the same room with them. I'm not like that. But I listen to people who feel this way, and I even try to put myself in their shoes and understand how they're feeling. Show a little empathy, you know? Something that's in short supply these days, but we need more of it in the world right now. And as artists and writers, hopefully, we're good at empathizing. So I'm going to say something I've said before, and I'll probably say it again as long as there's a pandemic going on, because it's so important. Check on the people you care about. Even if you've adjusted after 5 or 6 months of semi-lockdown, don't assume that everyone else you know feels the same way, or that they'll get into a better frame of mind after talking to you for a few minutes. Of course you should be supportive, but this isn't the time for toxic positivity. Their feelings and concerns are valid. So even if you can't identify with what they're going through, realize that it's very real and difficult for them, and be there for them. There's a lot you can do for people that'll let them know that you genuinely care about them. Speaking of empathy, the Democratic National Convention was this past week. I bring that up mainly because the Democratic candidate, former Vice President Joe Biden, is considered by many to have empathy, in contrast with the current resident of the White House. I didn't watch the whole convention, but I did watch some of it every night. So I heard a number of speeches. And of course, this was the first virtual convention, and speeches don't sound the same when they're not done in front of large crowds. But I think this format actually worked. It was a more intimate format than you might see at a more, sorry I have to say this, but conventional convention. And for the Democratic Party, at least, I think it works. I'm going to skip the next convention, and that's all I'm going to say about that. But being in the middle of this season, with an election a little over 2 months away, well, it has me thinking about a lot of things, but one of the many things I'm thinking about is political speech writing in general. And possibly even devoting a podcast episode to it. So I'm going to try and leave my political opinions out of the rest of this episode as much as I can, and focus on the craft of speech writing. How it's done. What makes a political speech effective? What doesn't work? That kind of thing. And obviously, you don't just find professional speech writers in the political arena. You also see them throughout the business and nonprofit worlds. But politics are just so visible right now that I think it's best to focus on just that one type of speech writing, at least for now. I'll admit that even though I tend to pay closer attention to politics than a lot of people do, I know very little about political speech writing. Political journalism, yes, but probably the most I knew about political speech writing was probably that a lot of politicians don't actually write their own speeches. Or do they? I'll get into that a little more later on. But according to one of the first articles I found, a piece written by Jeff Shazal called Five Myths About Political Speechwriting, which I will include a link to in the show notes for this episode, quote, "Speechwriters are rarely figures of public note. If we have a creed, it is to cultivate a passion for anonymity, as the Brownlow Committee implored presidential staff in 1937. Unquote. The need for speechwriters to stay out of the spotlight makes sense, for the most part. The audience for a political speech isn't there, or isn't watching, to get to know its writer better. In most cases, they don't know or care who wrote it. They want the speaker to convince them to vote for them, or support an issue, or get involved with some aspect of the political process, or maybe they just find that speaker charismatic and just want to listen to them some more. Of course, that raises the issue of whether politicians truly care about the words that come out of their mouths if those words aren't their own. And yes, there have been times when politicians, who will remain nameless since again, I want to focus on speech writing, have been accused of being quote-unquote puppets or reading their speeches off a teleprompter. When a politician's delivery of a line is so wooden that you can tell they memorized it, it strongly suggests that they're not speaking from the heart, which makes it understandable that a lot of people from all over the political spectrum harbor a strong distrust of politicians, as well as speechwriters. But as Shazal points out, just because there have been some well-publicized speechwriting fiascos over the years doesn't mean we can't appreciate what goes into the speechwriting process. And that the majority of speechwriters, seemingly, at least according to the articles that I looked into for this episode, have some pretty high standards. One important point that Shazal makes is that speech writing is usually a collaborative process, which means that in a lot of cases, you're not going to have one writer working on a speech. He or she might bounce ideas off other writers, and they may even edit and tweak each other's work. Speech writers may also get input from their powerful bosses during the speechwriting process, in addition to being told what to write about in the first place. I mean, I really can't picture a political candidate telling his or her writers, "You know what? I don't know what to talk about. You pick a topic for me." Writers might be asked to take something out or change something, and even if that's not the case, they might leave enough room in the speech so that the person delivering it is able to fit in some witty aside or another kind of personal touch that will help the potential voters connect with them as a genuine human being. Schessel goes on to explain that teamwork can also be found in the fact-checking process. And even though you may be thinking that you've heard lies in political speeches, conscientious speechwriters, in general, know how important fact-checking is. According to Schessel, quote, "Anecdotes are thoroughly vetted and scrapped if they seem suspect. Grand claims are qualified in ways that result in accurate, if sometimes awkward, phrase making." Unquote. I think this is something we shouldn't take for granted. Lies, and even exaggerations, can be caught pretty easily by someone with a working knowledge of Google or Bing. And again, you might be thinking, "Yeah, but so-and-so's fans don't care if they're lying." And once again, by so-and-so, I'm honestly not referring to a specific person. I've heard that claim made about charismatic politicians on both sides of the aisle. That may be true. But there are always going to be voters who haven't made up their minds yet about whether to vote, never mind whom they should vote for. They may care about accuracy, and others, such as journalists, who are often tasked with dissecting speeches made by prominent politicians and helping to influence prospective voters, certainly care. Having said all of that, speechwriters often are facing deadlines that other types of writers would find unimaginable. In a piece called The Political Speechwriter's Life, Robert Lehman talks about being asked at 11:50 one night to write a 150-word speech that was to be delivered on the House floor at 12:02. So that's like 12 minutes. There have also been times I can remember when an unthinkable tragedy happened, and a politician was expected, within an hour or so after it happened, to make a statement. Obviously, if you're a speechwriter tasked with coming up with a last-minute assignment like this, that kind of time frame won't give you a lot of time to edit. So you're pretty much going to get one shot to hit all the right notes. So obviously, a good speechwriter will need to be able to write fast, and they'll also need to be flexible. They may need to abandon another project they're working on if an emergency comes up. Hell, it sounds to me like they need to be prepared to be woken up in the middle of the night to write a speech if necessary. But also, a speechwriter working under conditions like these needs to be able to make a point and make it well in a short span of time. Even if not all of the speeches they write are short, or if they're often given ample time to write longer speeches. So, I've spoken about some aspects of the speechwriting process. Now let's talk about the kind of language that's ideal for a political speech. I didn't hear many big words in any of the speeches I heard this past week. Or, come to think of it, in the majority of political speeches I've heard over the years. And the reason for that seems pretty straightforward. If you're a politician, you won't get your point across if your listeners don't know a lot of the words they're hearing. In the best case, you might have some listeners Googling one word after another and missing the overall message of the speech. And in the worst case, your listeners might think you're an elitist. And if they do, they may conveniently forget you didn't actually write the speech and develop a permanent dislike for you. As Lehman puts it, speechwriters really need to aim for a seventh grade reading level. And also remember that even that may be too complex for a significant percentage of adult listeners. This suggests that speechwriters not only need to watch the words they use, they also need to steer clear of the long-winded sentences you might find in, say, an academic journal, or even some fiction. However, Lehman suggests that effective fiction actually can help writers here. As Lehman puts it, quote, "I use story to move listeners. I also plant something in the opening and bring it back at the end, the way Anton Chekhov advised." Dot, dot, dot. There's a little ellipsis in here. "And I search for illuminating details." Unquote. It's probably not surprising that a number of prominent speechwriters, such as Peggy Noonan, who served as a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr., and Mark Salter, a former speechwriter for John McCain, went on to write more creative fiction and nonfiction works after leaving the political world. It just shows that no matter what type of writing writers do, they find ways of drawing upon what they know and love. In a piece called "What It's Really Like to Be a Political Speechwriter," Emma Roller brings up one more thing political speechwriters need: thick skins. For every politician who's been accused of saying things they don't mean, there's at least one who cares very much about what they're saying, both content-wise and grammar-wise. Some of them have big egos and may have their writers correct words and phrases that might seem pretty trivial. And some of them may not want to surrender the important assignments to their writers. Going back to what I was saying earlier about, do politicians actually write their own speeches or not? Here, Roller uses as an example Barton Swaim, who was once a speechwriter for former South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford. Sanford often wrote his own speeches, which meant that, as Swaim put it, quote, "I was basically just coming up with cute things that you could say at a gathering of the National Square Dancing Society or a grand opening at the Heinz Factory. So, coming up with stories about ketchup." Unquote. To say the least, I imagine this can be a humbling experience for a talented writer who, in many cases, may have gone to a top school and earned an advanced degree. But it does seem to me that it's not as much about the writer as it is about the politician's need to be the center of attention. This will sound cynical, but that's why some people go into politics in the first place. Okay, it's probably more than some. You get the idea. For a number of reasons, the life of a political speechwriter does seem more difficult than the lives of a lot of other types of writers. The schedule, or I should say the lack of a predictable schedule, and deadlines would probably intimidate all but the most intrepid journalists. But it also seems like there are a lot of eyes on what you're doing, both during the writing process and afterward, when journalists and poli-sci professors and the like are dissecting your speeches, Plus, you have to be cognizant of how you write, the type of language you use, that sort of thing. And even though it's probably something speechwriters are well aware of before they sign up for the job, knowing that most people are never going to find out who you are, especially if you write a well-received speech that's going to be reread and reread for years to come, that can't be easy. Unless your goal in life was always to be a behind-the-scenes type. Researching this topic has increased my appreciation for what speechwriters do. Sure, we can disagree all day on the contents of their speeches. And when we hear a candidate deliver a speech that contains what we consider a particularly egregious message, we are within our rights to wonder what the hell that writer was thinking, and call them out on it if we find out who they are. I would argue that the same applies if we learn that a speech was plagiarized. It's definitely sad that there are speechwriters who do these things. But it seems to me that, for the most part, good political speechwriting requires some semblance of integrity. In addition to the stamina needed to put up with the unpredictable conditions, as well as the climate of distrust. Just because millions of Americans have become cynical toward the political process, and millions who aren't cynical tend to be too rigid about their beliefs to consider a different point of view, doesn't mean speechwriters should stop trying to persuade them to adopt a certain practice or vote anymore. For that reason, I would have to give credit to anyone who wants to go into political speechwriting, given the current climate. Plus, even though the higher profile mouthpieces who deliver their speeches may not show them all that much appreciation, it seems pretty obvious to me that political leaders need their writers. Whether it's because they don't have the time to write their own speeches, or because they can't say what they need to say as well as a writer can. So, trying to keep actual politics out of this discussion of political speechwriting actually wasn't too hard, and I'm glad. I can't blame people who've become cynical toward the political process, but I do wish there wasn't as much hostility in the current political climate. And I think it's getting harder to take ourselves and our opinions out of the process and just focus on something like speech writing for its own sake. I'm not saying you should compromise your beliefs. Not at all. I'm certainly not. But I think that trying to develop an understanding of how the political process works with a nonpartisan eye can actually make you more aware of how you interpret and react to a speech or a debate. But enough about what I think. Now I want to know what you think. Email me at marissadelefarfalle@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at @MarissaD13 and on Instagram at @MarissaDF13. And I'd really appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, as it'll help a lot more people find out about this show. Until next time, thank you so much for all of your support and feedback. I'm not going to lie, as much as I enjoy doing this podcast, your feedback does help me stay motivated to keep it going, explore new topics, and step out of my comfort zone. It's really a great feeling to learn about something I never knew much about before. And even though the amount of research I do on any topic isn't anywhere near what I'd need to become an expert on it, It whets my appetite to continue learning about it after I put these episodes up. And hopefully that inspires you to keep learning about it as well. Never underestimate the importance of research in the writing process. I always say that. And on that note, stay safe and peace out.
This podcast has been brought to you by Anchor, which is the easiest way to make a podcast. Go to anchor.fm for more info.